As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome into another episode of One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, just back from Lambeau Field, joined by Nick Baumgartner. You can find us on the Athletic app, ad-free. You can also get us over at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, all those places we've been for the last year and a half now. But Nick, pretty good first half from the Lions on Monday night, and then...
A flip job, Chris, you know, a flip job.
And now they're 0-2. So what do you think... What'd you think of that one?
Pretty interesting, because like you said, the first half, I really did think the plan and how the game kind of unpacked was perfect for the Lions. It was like exactly if you were going to draw it up the way that you wanted it to go, in, you know, against Aaron Rodgers and Lambeau like that, with the defense the way it is, and it's going to be like this all year. Basically keeping him in situations where you're daring him to stay in runs, shortening his fields and not giving up those big plays, and then keeping him on the bench and letting your offensive line really dictate how the game's going. On top of that, you're getting confident you were getting confident in the pocket, Jared Goff. That's exactly the recipe every week, I thought, for the Lions. And I mean, I went into halftime, I told you last night, I was like, I would not change anything. Yeah, and of course they did. Right. But like, wow. They were getting gashed on the ground, but honestly, I thought, like, who cares? Like, just keep limiting the shots, limiting the, you know, all the things that we talk about that they can erase, and you're going to give yourself a chance, you know, when it gets down to winning time. But they just couldn't get there. I thought, you know, they got further this week in that process than they did last week, which I think is progress. But you flip it around and it also makes it that much more frustrating. The more I sort of thought about it, I was like, that makes it much more frustrating that they played that bad in the second half, or the third quarter specifically. Like, that was... that's a frustrating thing. And I think that that was the thing I took away last night, was like, we're just going to have to see a lot of those, where we're just going to have to get used to people being like, well, that was really frustrating, because I think that's just going to happen sometimes. I mean, I'm curious on your sort of vibe on the same way there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it had to be a frustrating game, because even looking back on it now, you having some time to decompress and look back at the numbers, like Aaron Jones averaged 3.9 per carry. And some of that was the end of the game. But 3.9, AJ Dillon was 3.6. Rodgers, at halftime, I pulled up the next-gen stats for the game, and Melifonwu and Ora Worrier had been targeted once, and Melifonwu forced an incompletion. It was the one that he was running with the guy. It hit him in the back of the helmet. Like, it was pretty similar to the one Okuda gave up the touchdown on, except the receiver didn't make an adjustment this time. So that was it. They weren't throwing to the corner outside. They weren't really testing those guys at all. The defensive line, I thought, played better. Flowers and Romeo Okwara certainly looked more aggressive up front. They got some pressure. They got to Rodgers a couple times, flushed him from the pocket. And so I'm really looking back at the defensive game, and it just, to me, boils down to that they could not account for Aaron Jones out of the backfield. It was just one thing, basically. Like you mentioned, they sort of shifted. I think we got a post coming out Wednesday sort of breaking down some of this stuff, and I think you said something like Aaron Glenn blinked first in the matchup when they gave up the 50-yarder, the play that Melifonwu got hurt, was like one of the very few times that they weren't in too high safeties all night. I don't know.
It was like one of the first ones, yeah.
I mean, I think that they did a lot of things that they wanted to do, even defensively, and you come out of there with an 18-point loss because, you know, you have one mistake and things kind of snowball on you.
Right. I mean, I think that that's how they just – that's just their life this year. That's just how it's going to have to go. Like, the game was not the same after he took that 3rd and 12 and said, oh, you gave me one safety, I'm taking it. Like, and he hit it. And it's just like that's and the game was – I mean, I don't want to say the game was over, but the game was over. Like, right there. That was it. That's their margin. Like, they cannot get those back. And, you know, furthermore, all the little things like we talked about, like they could not cover – you know, they picked on Will Harris a couple times, although, you know, the more I kind of went back through it, it was like I actually think this probably ends up being maybe one of a better effort from Harris than that we're used to seeing, although it still probably wasn't great. And then also they picked on Jamie Collins. And it's the same thing a little bit like we saw last year when the Lions played Green Bay. They have no one that can cover tight ends, and they have no one that can do anything with backs out of the backfield. It's your safeties and your linebackers in coverage. Like, it's the same issue. It really wasn't even the corners as much in this game, I didn't think, as it was, you know, your inability to do anything with Rodgers when he knows he can get matchups like that, and he does it all the time to them, and it's just like... You can't give him those big shots. I think that that's the thing, is you've got to make him go the long way. And that was kind of what I thought in the first half. Like, he's just, and I was listening to the Mannings, you know, or whatever, and they both talked about that. They were like, they're in this soft zone, and they didn't understand it. They were like, why are they still in this soft zone? They're just going to run it all game. And I'm like, in my head, like, no, stay in it all game. Make him take the long way and make Rodgers, who is frustrated, right? He entered that game frustrated. Make him check and check and check until he gets frustrated, and maybe he'll make a mistake and you can flip the game. And I thought the Lions flinched first and he took advantage, and that's why Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers. But like, it's how it goes sometimes. But that's when we're talking about no margin, like that's kind of what we talk about.
Yeah. Apologies if I know I've had some had the weird typing issue a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
so
no,
I just opened the door and came in here. So I'm just like rolling through all the sound effects. Yeah. I mean, and look, it's Aaron Rodgers, right? And you got Devontae Adams. You got Aaron Jones, and like Robert Tonyan's really good tight end, especially in the red zone. And I mean, that throw, the touchdown to Tonyan.
Oh, God.
Anzalone was all over. I mean, the only thing he didn't do was put his hand up, but he was all over that route. If you were watching that and you went back through that tape with a quarterback who isn't Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You'd probably say to him, what are you doing? Why are you throwing that pass?
Right, exactly.
That's covered with a guy over the top. There's a safety over the top, too. And you have a player breaking across the field wide open for a first down. Take the first down. Rodgers being Rodgers, you know, rips one in there.
Yeah.
You know, Tonyan puts his hands up, and it just lands right there on a line over Anzalone's shoulder. So sometimes you just tip your cap. I think the same thing, like the Devontae Adams deep ball. Didn't love the coverage there, but it's a 50-yard pass to his outside shoulder,
right.
Dropped in perfectly. Like, sometimes you're going to give him up. And
it is what it is.
And
yeah,
you just got to come back. But I think that was sort of what Dan Campbell's point was at the end of the game, which I thought was pretty interesting, where he said, you know, I put this one on the offense. I thought, and I think that's sort of what he was talking about. The more I've had time to think about it now is just
right. –
You know Rodgers, you're not going to hold Rodgers to 14 points. I know the Saints just held him to 3 or whatever, but most games you're not going to hold Rodgers to 14 points, especially at night, at home. He's going to get some. And so you can't let 21-17 after that touchdown become, you know, just sort of fall apart on you. You can't let
it
go from one thing to the next, and that's what we've seen happen now twice for the Lions is they have these little stretches where it kind of it just really gets away from them. And I think offensively too, you know, like we've said, that first half looked really, really good. We saw a ton of the stuff that they showed
It did.
In camp that we thought was going to work. A lot of the pre-snap motions, a couple of the formations where they, you know, they put two wide receivers to the left, they put a back and a tight end to the right and sort of forced the defense to give up what they were running, like all these little tricks that you can do, and they worked a lot. We even saw Goff even broke out the zone read for 20
yards. He did. Like, yeah, and he got it.
I mean, it was all
working. I thought it was a smart plan, yeah, for sure.
And then the fourth and one didn't go. And that felt like a huge turning point in that game when it happened. And, you know, it turned out to be a big turning point. So, I don't know. That fourth and one, what do you think? Because if they went for it, they ran for a fourth and one.
Yeah.
In week we just one, they got stuffed.
Right. Right, exactly. And so we just got done talking to Campbell, and he said that, right? Like, you know, last week they tried one on fourth and one, and, you know, the Packers know that, right? You know, it's one of those things where you know that they're probably looking for certain things, and you also know that they know you've been running the ball, so maybe they're going to think run here and try to, you know, mess with you up front and get something there and just a quick hitter and messes the whole deal. So I understood the logic of it, but I do think maybe to a degree you outthought yourself because, you know, or at the very least, pick a better pass, you know, because I thought if that was what you wanted, that's a tough one. Because, and I know that there was, you know, St. Brown sort of worked his way open on the other side of the field, but I don't know if that was Goff's first read or his backside read or whatever, but it just seemed like a high degree difficult. The Mannings talked about that, and it was a great point. It was like, why are you making him make this, like, across the field, extremely difficult throw on fourth and one? You worked so hard to get yourself to fourth and one over here on the other side of the field, like with your offensive line, let it, you know, McPayton said something. What'd he say? He said third and 10 is a talent play and fourth and one is a scheme play. You got to have a better play there. And I thought that made a lot of sense. And I thought that was a critique too, but the plan in general from Anthony Lynn in this one, I thought was, and Campbell and everybody really, I thought it was very good. I thought, you know, they're doing what they need to do. You looked at last week's tape with the Saints, how they played Green Bay. They hit them on the edges and they messed with Green Bay's corners in those zones. And that's what the Lions did too. And they tried to do, and it worked. And Goff was aggressive when he had to be, and then it stopped working. And that's kind of the trick here, is that one or two mistakes for this team, there's a couple that are going to be unforgivable. And there's some that are just going to be really hard to overcome because they don't have the roster to do it. And so you just can't make them. And it's a hard thing to ask, but it also lets you really see where guys are at, right? Like that, I thought about that a lot last night, Chris, talking about Goff. Like, man, like there's not going to be any doubt, I don't think, about where he's at as a quarterback, because every mistake and positive play he makes is going to be magnified,
right,
based on, you know, kind of who's around him here.
Just for the fourth and one for me, before we move on from that, because I don't want to nitpick it too much, because I think, you know, if those work, then they look great. And if they don't, then you're like, well, why didn't you do something else? But in that particular case, I think you're right. You know, Campbell said after the game, the first read or the play was designed to get Hockenson in a one-on-one. And the Packers took that away. So whether Goff saw it pre-snap that it was gone, or that was his first read, it was gone. And his second read was the one he threw, which was Cephus in the one-on-one. But like you said, he had, you know, St. Brown worked open. Swift came out of the backfield. I'm assuming those were options 3 and 4, and Goff didn't get to him because he took the shot. And, you know, on the one hand, you like that he has some confidence in Cephus to go make that play on third down there. He had a couple really nice catches in the first half. Goff talked after the game about how he's, you know, continued to improve. He's really a guy that they're starting to trust here, and I think you see that there. But that's also one of those bad golf plays where he just like, slow down.
Yep.
You've got options, like, process what's happening. The pressure was coming a little bit, but he wasn't bailing out for his life there. Like, I think he had time to spin back and find Swift or St. Brown. So, I don't know. I didn't love that particular play call. I like the idea to go for it. And I think that there's something in between, you know, going, you know, putting 9 on the line and trying to power way through.
Yeah, I even think you could, like, RPO that, right?
Yeah,
anything.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you could do a lot of stuff there. Yeah, I agree. Just something different in terms of the approach, yeah.
I just hate taking, as we talked about as the game was going on, I hate taking the offensive line, like, kind of out of it there, because that's where you were winning that game, and that's where the whole game plan was built, is around winning up front, and you basically were just wiped that advantage away and said, well, we'd rather have Cephus against whoever it was, Kevin King, Eric Stokes.
No, I totally agree.
There, so. But otherwise, we've got 2 weeks now of Anthony Lynn, plus all of camp and the preseason. And yeah, I mean, I think this all looks pretty good. And that's admitting that this wide receiver group is sort of is what it is. I mean, I guess my only other criticism at this point, or critique, I don't know, and criticism sounds too harsh, but The only other thing I really would like to see more from them with the personnel that they have is, you know, throughout camp, I think they did a really good job of designing stuff up to get the ball in St. Brown's hands, and we haven't really seen any of that. You know, they were running screens for him, and he was their guy they were using on some of those jet sweeps and things like that, and we haven't really seen it yet. Maybe it's coming, but that's the one thing I would say could help a little bit, but I don't know. Like, how many times is Trinity Benson going to go just win a rep on the outside? And Campbell keeps talking about Tom Kennedy being so great. And like, I don't know, man. Like, I just don't know what else you can do offensively that Anthony Lynn isn't doing so far.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, it would really help if Tyrell Williams could give you something here. I mean, because that's really thing that's, I think that's what's hurting St. Brown as much as anything else as well, because a lot of his work is going to come from the situations where, you know, if you can get Goff, you know, and this would have been a game where you would have really liked to see Williams, because Goff was here for it, you know, like he was aggressive in the first half. Yeah. Like we talked about that early in the game where they didn't get a touchdown there on that one drive where they come down, but I mean, they called shots and he took them, right? Like he's not checking the ball down. He's taking, and this would have been a game where maybe that extra deep threat or a big body like that could have helped you out. But, you know, creating extra space underneath for a guy like St. Brown, that's what you're hoping someone like Williams does in time. And, you know, maybe when they take away Hockenson and that, then that's extra stuff for him. But that would help a lot. But I think that, and we talked about this today, and it's something we wrote for Wednesday, like there's some issues right now that they have that you're just not going to be able to do anything about. Like defensively, you know, what do you do? I mean, in the secondary, you're not fixing that this year. It has to be fixed through the draft, you know. Receiver is another one of those things, but I would also argue at the same time, and you could play the other side of it and say, well, I mean, they're not dropping passes, really. It's not the receiver's fault that they got off course in that game. And these are the moments where I tell myself that I really agree with Holmes' philosophy, what it seems like anyway is his philosophy with receivers, where it's like, you could patchwork this if you got to get better, obviously, but it doesn't need to be this dominant, you know, like you got to be on the hunt for these great. And I think that that's something to remember as we go forward here, as they build this team and like ID what's the most important, you know, because right now, as we look at it, and that's an interesting question that just kind of popped into my head, like safety, linebacker, receiver are still obviously positions where you're like, you got nothing there, but like receiver is absolutely number three on my to-do list in that conversation, I think, right now. And that's something that I kind of try to look at the whole context of how we're talking about it. But those are interesting things to talk about too, I guess.
Do you think they again, I'm going hindsight here, but I know we talk about this a lot in the offseason, and it's come up before, but do you think they should have done more to get this roster, I don't know, not even more competitive,
I think I know what you're
just
saying.
To have like more meaningful depth headed into the year, because we talked a lot about, well, it feels like they need another cornerback, or like maybe they need, if Perriman's not going to work out, maybe you go get another receiver. I mean, there were a bunch of spots here where you sort of looked at safety. They signed Dean Marlowe. He's not even playing for whatever reason. Like,
exactly.
You know, I don't know. We haven't really talked about Holmes. We talked about Holmes and sort of the big picture, like give him time. He's building with the young guys. They're going to find out what they have, but short term, do you think he missed some opportunities here to put this team in better position early in the season?
Safety is the one that I can't get over in my head. I mean, I don't. I just like, and I know maybe it's going to come for Will Harris, and I'm just going to be like, well, this is great. But like, it's such an important position in the NFL. My God, they're so athletic and so good. Look around the league. Look at the guys that are making these big, and defenses now. People are starting to figure this out. It's very hard to play defense in football in 2021. You need these guys on your back end that can do everything. And your safeties have to be able to fit the run. They have to be able to cover in man. They have to be able to be organized in zone. And they have to know everything. They have to be awesome football players. And the Lions, it's just, like, I think you could have given yourself more, like we've talked about in camp a lot, right? Like, you didn't have to spend a bunch of money and get an awesome safety, you know, in year one here as you're trying to reload it. I understood that. You didn't even necessarily have to maybe draft one, I guess, but I would have liked to see them maybe invest a little bit more there than they maybe use in some other spots, I guess, because it just didn't seem like they prioritized it at all. Yeah. And it's like, it's killing you right here. It's, I mean, I think it is, but I mean, and then corner, I guess they tried there to kind of piecemeal it, but you know, things were the way they were in camp and they didn't really react to it. So that's another one where you say you just didn't, you're not, injuries are happening, but you're not really giving yourself a chance to hang either. And that's the one, those are the two, I guess, that I can't really get over.
The safety thing is really interesting because they signed Marlowe, who was a great third safety.
Yeah.
And a really good third safety in Buffalo. I mean, he didn't have a, there wasn't a ton on his resume. Like he hadn't been doing it for 10 years, but he was really effective in that role. And he came here and it seemed like they were going to fold some three safety looks into things as they were putting the pieces together. And then they got to camp and we didn't really see any of it. And now we've gotten into the regular season and they haven't done it at all. And so I don't know if the game plan shifted at some point, but even some of those spots last night where throws were going to the tight end or to Aaron Jones, especially, you know, you kind of wondering, well, would you have more of a chance with Dean Marlowe following Jones out of the box than Jamie Collins? Like, is that a way to counter what's happening here? And obviously Derek Barnes, I think, is an option there too, but it's been interesting that that hasn't happened. And I think you're right because they still really, they've been very high on Will Harris and we've seen him make a play here or there, but
nothing
you know, you get super excited about. And to me, it's almost more disappointing that Tracy Walker isn't showing up more because he is the guy who has the athletic skill set to kind of fit there. And I don't know, maybe just bouncing around positions like he has the last year or two has slowed that down. But that's like he had that one Rodgers threw right into his chest. He made a really good read. He was in coverage and should have been a pick. And like those are the types of plays you need from a guy like that if he's going to be a game changer for you. So I don't know. I mean, that, it's tough when your safeties aren't playing well and your linebackers are your worst unit and you're down to Bobby Price and Jerry Jacobs as your backups. And now Price is like temporarily a starter. Like there's only so much you can do defensively to cover up all.
Well, yes. I mean, first things first here as we've arrived on the defensive side of the ball. Derek Barnes needs to be on the field. I mean, Campbell did say it this afternoon. He was like, Barnes deserves a shot, and he and Glenn are going to talk about it today, as they do every week and all this. I am sure that they have hesitation with Barnes due to coverage, responsibilities, and all these other things, right? But Anzalone and Collins aren't exactly lighting up the world here. You know, Anzalone, at least, you know, Campbell said today, Anzalone wasn't perfect, but he's playing his ass off, and he was all over the field, and he was in on a ton of tackles, and we're going to take that. And somebody was like, what about Collins? And he was like, Anzalone plays harder, was more or less what he said. And that led into the Derek Barnes is going to get a chance, and it certainly seems like it's going to come off of Jamie's rep sheet. But, like, I don't care whose sheet it comes off of. Like, Barnes needs to play because they have got to get faster in the middle of the field if for no other reason than to – they've got to start being winning more down, more first downs, right? They have to be better – on first down, because if they are in third and five or six, it is over. It's over. Like, so they have to be better on first and second down to even give themselves hope to have a chance on third down that somebody even accidentally screws up, right? Or something like that. Because that, to me, is it. And Jamie Collins is not doing you anything against the run right now, or anything in the flat or whatever else in terms of the things picking these guys up out of the backfield. It's just not there. So bad signing by Bob Quinn, bad want, wish list thing by Matt Patricia, whatever. It's not there. You need to give Barnes a chance. And I think that that's probably what we'll see this week, I assume. But, you know, that's what's still screaming off the page here. They're just too slow in the middle.
I mean, this is another example here of where Dan Campbell just...
Oh, yeah, this was weird.
There's no filter. Like, it's just, he's going to give you
a good weird.
Like,
a good weird.
Yeah. You appreciate it for sure, but there's no way when it was Dave Burkett asked him, you know, people who criticize Collins' effort level, like, do you see anything to that? And he basically said yes. He basically is not playing hard.
He didn't say no. Yeah, he didn't say no.
And I think, like you said, it sounded like, you know, just reading between the lines that they're going to try and get Collins on the field on third downs. Yep. But only as a pass rusher, probably. I mean, you can't use him in coverage. So, I don't know. I mean, it sounded like at some point here, we might be talking about whether he's even still on the roster.
That's an interesting discussion. We talked about this before we started, right? Like, that's what something I want to ask you in the show here. So, first time we've arrived at this. And I think right. that, I don't know that this will be a thing. Maybe it won't. Maybe Collins will be like, yeah, he's right. I was dogging it, like, or whatever. I don't know. Or maybe he'll be like, this is bullshit. I'm not doing this, right? Both could happen here. So, like, what do you do? Because you're weighing the cap. So now you're Brad Holmes, Chris. You're weighing the cap. You're weighing the current situation. Do you go to Collins and just be like, you're going to be the third linebacker here and it's going to cost us whatever it costs us? Or do you release him and or try to trade him or whatever? I don't know. What do you do here in this situation?
Yeah.
Because we also haven't seen Barnes play yet. That's the other
thing. Well, that's the other thing. And Collins already took a pay cut before the season started. So, I mean, you could move him. I mean, you could trade him or release him at this point. Like, you'd be tacking on some dead money to your cap this year, but. Like, who cares at this point? You're not spending it on anything. I mean, cut into what you're rolling over maybe a little bit. But I don't really see a way that he's on the roster next year, right?
No way.
I mean,
no chance.
So we're talking about, are you going to be better in the present with him out there for the next 15 games? And I don't know. I really
That's
don't.
Debatable.
Not if he plays like that. I mean, he just seems like he doesn't have
in
the
quick,
juice to get out in coverage.
Yeah.
He looked like the slowest guy on the field, and the Packers kept attacking him because of it. But he also, to Campbell's point, you know, Anzalone missed a bunch of plays, but I guess at least he's throwing his body in there and trying to disrupt things. Collins is just sort of letting the blockers wash him out of the – like, you're not getting that from Jamie Collins. He had the one at the end where he blitzed and he took on the running back and sort of freed up a sack, and that was about the only positive play I could remember from him the entire game. So, I don't know. I mean, you have to see what Derek Barnes can do and not like, well, let's get him four or five snaps. Like, it's the Ravens. You got Lamar. Like, let's go – just turn him loose.
Oh, yeah.
And find out.
Absolutely.
Like, give him 40, 50 snaps.
And there you said it. This is the excuse week, right? Where you're like, well, we got Lamar out there, Jamie. You can't be running around anyway. You can't chase him. You got to get, because, like, this is, but I mean, like, it's an interesting conversation, though, because you're going to have it with some people here, maybe, you know? And obviously, I think Collins was the first one that everybody kind of pointed to and said, like, you know, he's here until Derek Barnes proves to be better than him, and then he's not here. And there are other guys on the team right now that you could say that about, and those conversations are going to probably have to happen when they get here. But what are you getting out of those guys in the meantime, as opposed to what they're giving you back? Like, we haven't really heard any complaints about him to this point.
Right.
We haven't heard Campbell say anything in camp that, to the contrary, usually, that, you know, it's been, they've liked what Collins has given them. They've liked how he's worked with the other linebackers. And maybe, again, I would say, maybe this is just another Dan Campbell moment where he's like turning the needle on a guy, because he's done that a couple times already. We heard him do that with Swift. We heard him do that with Levi. We heard him do it with Stenberg. And so maybe this is just him being like, I thought he talked it. And it's not anything that he wouldn't go walk up to him probably in the locker room and say either. And I think
I'm sure he's already told him. He probably yelled him on
difference.
The sideline.
That's the difference. And the thing to remember about the Dan Campbell Lions is that anything he tells us, he's probably already told the player to his face in the locker room or during the game. So I that conversation's probably already happened between Dan Campbell and Jamie Collins. That'd be a fascinating one to watch.
Well, right, but there's two sides to this for me, which is one, you know, bringing up cutting Collins or trading Collins, and we're like 10 minutes removed from me saying that they don't have enough veteran guys on
exactly,
defense.
Right.
And
yeah.
Collins,
I don't know.
He's someone that wants to hold down the fort, but you can't just keep cutting until you're left with only
draft
picks and practice squad guys. So that's one part of it. The other part of it, though, is just this dynamic of how Dan Campbell operates. And like you said, I'm sure Jamie Collins is well aware that they are not happy with how he played or with his effort level in that game.
Yes.
But it's a different thing when the coach goes to the press and says, well, he's not playing as hard as our other linebacker who's out there. And we've got some spots where we can maybe use him on third downs now. Like,
without blinking.
This is a 30, 32-year-old linebacker who's been in playoffs, Super Bowls, made a ton of money in his career. He probably knows he's not going to be here in 2022. Mm-hmm. And it is a guy who I think fairly has been criticized throughout his career for not always seeming like he's invested. Like he doesn't, this is not, this did not just come out of the blue on Monday night. Like has followed him his whole career. And so I think this is going to be a test of how these veteran players respond to Dan Campbell. And I think he would say at least behind the scenes that if Jamie Collins pisses and moans about it, see ya, buddy. Gone. I don't want it anyway. And look, if he says you're right, I need to play harder, let's get back at it, let me get in the film room, that's what you're looking for. But I'm curious to see how guys are going to react they start getting called out like this.
Because we wrote that story 2 weeks ago. We just got done talking to all those guys, you know, that knew Dan Campbell from back in the day, and all of them pretty much said, like, he's not going to put up with any of that bullshit. And I think I was talking to, like, Steve McKinney or one of the McKinney brothers, and it was like, well, what do you mean? And they were like, well, let's just go tell him. Let's just go walk up to the guy and be like, that's not good enough. Yeah. And, like, you know it. And he'll just do it and not give a damn. And, like, that's what the whole staff is going to do to this team. And we talked about this early, like, your veterans, like, that's why Brockers is here, and I think that's why they like him a lot, is I think they think that Brockers can handle that. I don't know if they know that whether or not Jamie Collins can handle all that. I think that they've been through camp and stuff, they seem to get an understanding that they liked where that was going, but I think this is another test of it, and we'll see how he responds, because you're absolutely right. Like,
yeah,
you can't bring veterans in here who are going to challenge that sort of culture that you're starting to build, because you cannot play Jamie Collins if that's what you're telling your roster. Like, the guy who practices the best and plays the best or whatever is going to play, like, that means he's not playing next week, right? Like, period, end of story. Like, you have to follow up your word, and if guys can't sort of respect or understand that, then they really can't be here.
I was trying to find the quote from Quincy Carter, the former Cowboys quarterback who played with Campbell, and because he said something similar, like, these guys are, like,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna find out.
Yeah,
like,
right.
If they don't want, if they're not all in every single moment of every day that they're in that building, they are gonna get weeded out of here, because Campbell put so much into this, he's not gonna let other people put less into it. Basically,
exactly.
You know, right. And so Quincy Carter's message was just like, watch how many guys get cut over the next year or two that you think maybe could have helped, because they're just not seeing what they want from him. And there are a couple guys on this roster that I think you probably could circle and say, well, this isn't going to last very long. And Jamie Collins,
yes,
maybe
that's fair.
Is one of them. And certainly
he'd be top on the list right today, as far as I'm looking at it, because I don't see a lot. That's why I thought it was so glaring. Because we are not seeing effort issues anywhere else on this team. I don't see any. I mean, you know, everyone else out there, guys have had problems, right? Guys have looked bad. But I don't think anybody else is dogging it. And, I mean, that's an interesting one.
I don't know. And because I thought Collins looked pretty engaged during camp. And like,
I thought
we
so
had,
too.
There were a bunch of guys who, you know, Michael
More
Brockers
than last year, even, I'd sort say, of to be fair.
Coasted through camp. Like, there were some guys, and he was, you know, Brockers was dealing with an injury, but there were some guys who took, you know, those veteran days, and Collins was out there every single day, and he seemed to be chatting with Glenn, and like, he seemed to be invested. And then you get into the season, and I wonder how much of this is that he's not trying, and how much of it is he looks like he's not trying because he's just washed as a football player.
I think that might be what it is. Yeah,
maybe, like, it's both. I don't know, but you can't live with what he gave you Monday night.
Right,
like, you just can't do it, especially against an offense like that has, you know, the types of running backs and tight ends that it does. But, you know, we've seen it 2 weeks in a row now where Collins has been a huge liability, and I would probably disagree with Dan Campbell's assessment about Alex Anzalone, that he was all over the field.
Yeah, I don't know
field.
About all that.
I mean, he played hard, certainly, and he made
he was
a
all
bunch
over the field,
tackles,
all right.
But
right.
I don't know.
None
that
of it
didn't
was good.
Seem like what they wanted, like, right? Like, I don't know. I that didn't
no,
seem
like... it didn't. But, like, I think, like, his I guess his point probably was even to juxtapose, like, at least he's, I mean, at least he's playing hard.
He's trying, right.
You know, and it's like, yeah, fair enough. I mean, if that's the bare minimum of what we're talking about here, but no, he certainly wasn't. And, like, you could actually make the argument Collins probably might have played better than Anzalone in coverage to a degree, but, like, maybe that's the, yeah, maybe that's why this is happening, and we're going to find out. Maybe, you know, maybe it's Campbell and, you know, Glenn sort of challenging him and being like, I don't think you're washed as a player. I think that there is more in here, and I think you need to turn it on a little bit and figure out if you want to do this or not. And I wonder if that's what's happening, because, yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, Anzalone, to sit there and be like, I thought he played well, and Collins sucked, like, it's kind of being like, well, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, Collins didn't play well, but neither did Anzalone. So I don't know what that's all about, but it does seem to me that they're certainly challenging Mr. Collins here, one way or the other, or already have done so. And we'll see how that, you know, how else do you approach that? There's no other way. He was terrible. So, right. I mean, they both were, really. So, to be fair, but, you know, the depth and everything else, I mean, you got to get Barnes in there, but what else do you do? I don't know how much further you go. Do you get Reeves Mabin more snaps? I mean, what do you have, three? Yeah, I don't know if he gets more, you know, but I don't know if he's better either, you know, in that situation. It would help to play somebody else at quarterback, I guess, but yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So up front, they got Levi Onwuzurike back. As I said, I think Romeo Okorah and Trey Flowers played a little better. I think Brockers, you know, he Campbell called out Brockers as having a nice game. I thought he looked more active for sure. And he was dealing with that injury. So maybe he's feeling better now. And I think it felt like the Packers were a lot more successful on the ground than they actually were.
Yes.
You know, there wasn't really any interior pass rush again, which is something that's a problem, but I thought the defensive line looked better in week two than it did against the 49ers in week one. I don't know if you had the same takeaway or if you have thought there.
I thought they got a couple stops. They got a couple stuffs. They weren't getting completely depleted, you know, and rooted out of there so easily. Like, I think McNeil's going to be good. I would keep putting more on his plate, you know, kind of as they go forward, or at least find ways to get him more involved. Same thing with Onwuzurike. I know you probably want to start slow with him, and he didn't play a ton, but he got in there some.
And Nick Williams. I guess Nick Williams did give you
and
some.
And Williams did get
rush.
He got some pressure in there. You know, Nick Williams isn't giving you anything against the run, but that's also kind of like, to be fair, that's what it, that was the book on Nick Williams when Patricia signed him, right? Or Quinn, I guess, whatever. Like, was that they wanted him to help maybe provide some pass rush from that spot, which he did in this game. I mean, he's not a great run stuffer, but, you know, I'd like to see more. And I think that was another thing Campbell was kind of pointing to. And we've talked about this. I do think they can be better in the front seven. Look, certainly. They have enough on the roster right now to get the right combination out there, get guys healthy and get guys feeling whatever, I think, to be better than what we saw. Because they were coming off blocks. It wasn't just like a complete destruction like we've seen before when the Lions play the Packers, like we saw last year. Certainly not. So that's probably the frustration there, is that if you could just keep a couple of those first down runs that went for 5 yards down to two, then maybe you're living in third and eight instead of third and five, and maybe the play sheet's different, and, you know, you're going to have a chance. Maybe something, you know, goes wrong or whatever, and that's how you play it. I mean, that's how they have to do it this year as they go forward, and I can understand that. But, yeah, I mean, I would like to see some of the younger guys there as well, because we need to see it, and I think they could probably help them.
Well, that's really got to be like a strength of this team. This has to be the same way the offensive line started carrying that side of things. The defensive line really has to carry it on the other side, and hasn't so far. But I do think, you know, if you're looking for sort of silver linings, I thought it was, you know, as Campbell has said, kind of incrementally better in week two than it was in week one. Yep. And so if it looks better in week three than it did in week two, then you at least know you're headed in the right direction. But I like, is there any way this defense is like okay, serviceable this year? They've given up almost 80 points already in two games. You know, they're back to this spot where it's like, well, just give us, can you get us one damn stop, like at some point in the game, and give us a chance?
I think that, so yes, I think they can be good enough to do that. I think they'd be, I do. I think they can be good enough to be the team that's, could you just get us one or two stops here? If we measure everything else right and we maintain on offense, if you can just do your part and limit like two of these drives to stops, I think we can handle this and pull this off. I do think they have enough to get to that. That's not saying a lot, but I think that's better than last year, though, right? I think that if you want to get right down to the nitty gritty here, and you're just talking about incremental like improvement, like look, like they had 14 pressures in this game.
Yeah.
Okay, so like that's not bad. Okwara's getting in there. He got in there last week too. That's not bad. This is two straight weeks, I think, that you've gotten pretty good stuff from AJ Parker, right? Mm. This is another day where they got something from Charles Harris. There's a couple little things here that if they can sort of, you can't have that kind of effort from Collins. Your other linebacker has to be better, obviously. If you can hide some things in coverage and just play teams in that exact thing that we just talked about, like just dare teams to take chances into coverage that they don't want to do because maybe you're playing a little more stout on first down. Like if you can do that, then yeah, you can flip the script and make the offense screw up. Like that's what they need to do. They need to get out of the situation where they're under so much pressure to play a look perfectly and get into more like third and eights, third and sevens, where it's like, hey, why don't you guys screw something up here? And maybe we'll accidentally get a punt. Like that's what they need more of in order to get there. It has to happen on first down, but I think they have a chance to at least get to that. I do. I mean, that's not good by any stretch, but that's better than what we saw last year. I mean, I have more hope for whatever this is defensively for them today than I did it last year at this time. I say that without even blinking. I would ask you the same thing. What are your thoughts on that? Because I know it's a different situation completely, but based on everything we're seeing here, effort, everything else, that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the effort's better. I do think that the scheme is better and gives you at least more of a chance to sort of hang in these games. And as you pointed out this week, like this was Aaron Glenn's second game. He's faced the 49ers offense with Kyle Shanahan. Now he gets Aaron Rodgers, who is going to find every weakness you have out there. So you would think eventually, like maybe not with Lamar Jackson, but maybe
not this week.
Maybe with Justin Fields or Andy Dalton or with Joe Burrow or Kirk Cousins. Like some of these quarterbacks, you can find some edges and take a couple shots here and there, and maybe this looks a little different. So I don't think the schedule makers did them any favors coming out of the blocks either here. But I feel like we're at a point already where the expectations for Derek Barnes are going to be unfair, and I'm trying not to add to them here. But I really want to see what Derek Barnes can do to change sort of the tenor of things on the second and third levels, because I think having someone who can play downhill and be really aggressive with it and get after the quarterback and give you a couple of those splash plays would make a huge difference. And also having someone who's not just a total liability in coverage. And I know he's not going to be, he probably won't even be that good in coverage, but least can run, he at least has some speed and he'll tackle. And maybe that's enough for right now.
Right. He can at least recover if he like takes a terrible step or whatever, or give himself a chance. And that's kind of the thing I think we're looking at here is like, you're not going to get the full answer on whether or not Derek Barnes is like going to be a great player in 20 reps or whatever that he gets, or maybe he plays the whole game here, against Baltimore. But like Chris is saying, I totally agree with you. You need a something in the middle there. Like your free hitter needs to be a guy who can wreck a drive, and just you need somebody that can get in there and make a play. Like we see it with all these defenses. Like Bobby Wagner's been doing it for 250 years at this point in Seattle. Like He just goes in and makes a play and blows up a drive. And for no other reason than he made a play, that drive is dead. And we get a possession back. Like, they need someone who can do that once in a while, and they don't have anybody that can do that. And in modern football, those plays come from your safeties, and they come from your inside linebackers. And it's like the weakest part of Detroit's defense right now, and that's just the plight that they're, you know, dealing with. And I think until, you know, that changes, that's kind of what they're up against.
What else you got? Anything else you want to talk about out of this one? Anything else you want to look forward? I mean, I think the guys that we think were going to be good offensively have been good. Do you want to talk about Sewell a little bit? You got to watch him.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about
a little there. So
let's talk about Sewell. I don't want to talk a ton about. I mean, Goff. Did we touched on him? I think enough. I guess for right now, yeah. Or at least last week anyway. The offensive line, I guess. Sewell in this game, again, it's another day of evidence where it's like when Decker gets back, and we talked about this today, I don't know how to do this other than you at least have to try Taylor Decker at right tackle, right? I mean, I don't know, and I don't know that that's necessarily going to be a bad thing, and I think my whole thing has just been focused on like get Decker back in there because I think their run game could actually get better, and I think it could actually get pretty cool. If you can get him in there, I wouldn't want to trade him. I would rather work him at right tackle and see if that works and see if you can make it work or whatever. Obviously, that's where my focus goes. But I mean, I don't know if he can work at right tackle. So I don't know. Like what I'm curious to talk with you on this because where are you thinking here? Because Fraley said it last week. Like I've never even seen him play right tackle in the NFL. That was Fraley. So right. He's like, so we need to do that first before we do anything else. And like, that's where they're at with that whole situation. And I think that was Hank probably telling somebody above him, like, we need to have a conversation before you just come dumping this on my doorstep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that probably needs to happen. Yeah, for sure. So your thoughts on this situation?
I mean, I thought Sewell was really good again for starters. You know, they obviously can run the ball. We know they can run the ball behind him, but I just think everything looks like for his second game in the NFL, he looks so smooth in his pass. Like, the pass protection in general, I thought was really good for the majority of the night. But I thought he was, I mean, I wrote it on Monday night. Like, you kind of already are not, don't even think about him out there.
No, right, exactly.
Because you just expect him to block whoever's going to be out there. And that's game two. And I think he did a really good job of that. I think they tried to throw, you know, an occasional little mix up at him where they, you know, drop someone and bring a linebacker or something, and he was picking guys off, headed both directions, and he kept Goff clean. And so I don't know what more you could ask for from him over these first two games. And I don't see this really as a problem. I mean, I think
I don't either.
If Sewell comes in and just plays really, really well, like if this is what it's going to be, then all right, your best five includes Taylor Decker. Let's figure out where he's going to play.
Right.
And I think that that's probably where they're at. And they've talked a lot about not wanting to get ahead of themselves. Let's just figure out what the matchups are. Let's try to go week to week on it. But, you know, Decker's also got whatever it's going to be here, 4 or 5, 6 weeks of downtime where he can't practice because he's on IR, but he could be off to the side just sort of like, here's what my pass set needs to be when I'm playing right tackle. Like, this is sort of a built-in opportunity for them to see if he can just do anything
right
on that
because
side.
the one thing we did not see in training camp, because they just didn't really do this a lot, you know, and you don't really do it a ton anyway, and they didn't do the scrimmages, right, or the inner practice things. Yeah. So was the one line really run blocking with everything that they do?
Yeah.
And, you know, getting wide and stretching on teams and using motion and letting Sewell kind of get wide and Decker, who can also do that too. And that is really what I kind of want to see. And that's what I'm eager to see. Is there going to be another? I'm not as focused on where is Sewell going to play? I honestly, like, I think it would benefit him to stay at left tackle, but this guy is so impressive at this point. I don't know if it would be out of the question to be like, Panay, can you move back to right tackle? He might be like, yeah, coach, I'm fine. Like, whatever. I have no idea.
Yeah.
So I don't know how this is going to shake out, but I know that's the best five. And I know that, like, there could be a lot more in the bag here in terms of the cool stuff they can do in the run game, because they have, I mean, we haven't even talked about Vitae is hanging in at guard. He's hanging in. Jonah Jackson's coming off the ball really well. Like, and Ragnow is, you know, it's leveling out. He's the best center in the league. Like, I mean, he's grading out that way every game still. Like, this is how it's looking like we thought it could look. And, like, that's what I'm eager to see. I'm less interested in who plays which side and more interested to see, you know, what does this do to the offense when you got the full offensive line out there now? Do we see something different? That's got my curiosity here for sure.
Vitae's an interesting guy to bring up. We haven't really talked about him much at all.
Hanging in.
We've been talking about the young guys, but yeah, right? I mean, I think he's been pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's hanging in. He's not worth the money they're paying him, obviously, but he's hanging in. Yeah, right. Like, he's hanging in there. And I think that for this team right now, what they are, like, he's a decent fit because he's a good run blocker. You know, he can block all schemes. Not the best pass protector in the world, but, like, if you're putting him next to, you know, Ragnow and Sewell or Decker, I think that would help him, you know, quite a bit. So it's the best thing you have, right? Your offensive line. And, like, we talked about it in that fourth down situation, wanting to make sure that you're, you know, taking full advantage of the best thing that you have at that time. And so far, it looks really good, and I'm super curious to see where it goes. I guess I would ask, like, people have asked us, like, do you trade Decker? Do you explore that, you know, avenue for him? And I have no idea. I don't think I would do anything with that today, though. That would be a conversation I don't think I would even think about until, like, January. But for right now, yeah, I would think it would be all about you need to figure out how to play right tackle, maybe, going forward. But trade-wise, I mean, your thoughts on that, I guess, before we move on from something else, but, like, do you have an opinion on that as a possibility? I know we talked about it's not really a problem here. It's a good problem to have, but what's your thoughts on that situation? Or hypothetical, I should say.
I mean, I guess if a team's coming and saying, all right, we'll give you two firsts.
Something crazy,
left
right?
Tackle.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you consider it, but at the same time, if you're going to build this through the offensive line and your idea was to pair Decker and Sewell on the edges and have Jackson, Ragnow, and Vitae inside, can we at least see what that looks like for a little bit
for one
we
game?
Pull the trigger on it? Like, maybe that, right. Maybe that's as good as you think it's going to be, and then you go into next season and say, all right, we have one of the best offensive lines in football, we have one of the best tight ends in football, we have one of the best running back tandems in football, let's find like two other guys and figure this out.
Yes,
so
100%
I don't know.
Agree.
I wouldn't rush into it by any means. I would. Yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't
rush into it, and I don't. And if I had to bet based on all the things that we've heard from the Lions at this point, with Brad Holmes and Campbell being like, we just want good football players here. Like, Taylor, the thing that gets lost in this, and Chris brings it up every single time, Taylor Decker is a good player, ladies and gentlemen. Like, he's been a good football player for the Lions pretty consistently, apart from that year where he, had the back problem and everything else. But so, like, he's one of their better players when healthy. He's one of the best players, really. Captain, everything else. I don't know why you would want to move him. I don't think it's we got to get rid of this guy. I think he's still an asset that you drafted Sewell knowing that, this was possible. I'm sure that it was, in your head. So I don't think it's a problem either. I just think it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out, of course, but I'm more interested to see what it does to the offense, because I think it could actually, help them quite a bit.
All right, let's wrap. Give me one thing you're looking forward to on Sunday when the Ravens come in, Lions try to get their first win against, as we've said, another very difficult offense to deal with. And maybe you get a trap game, though. The Ravens just played that great one.
They're emotional,
the
Chiefs. Right.
Maybe you get them. Kind of let down. We'll see. But what's one thing you're curious to see on Sunday?
Well, it's going to be a big test, I think, for the offensive line, the pass pro. And so for Sewell, and this is the one where we just got done talking about the Decker situation there. I was not terrified of Green Bay's pass rush in this game. No offense to my old pal there, Rashawn Gary, and all the rest of the guys. I was not terrified of Green Bay's pass rush. I don't think it was terrific. We talked about, and I think this is real, the matchup that Sewell had with Bosa in week one, I thought was a good one for him. I'm interested to see. Baltimore is going to bring a lot of shit at Detroit from a pass rush, an exotic, and a pressure standpoint. It is going to be all cover zero, all cover one, bring the noise all game long. They are going to push and push and push and try to make Goff as uncomfortable as possible. So this for me is like the one where we're going to have our answer on, like, is Sewell a left tackle or not? Like, if he struggles here, then are we still talking about, like, is it impossible that he could never move? But if he also stacks up here and plays well against speed on the left side, then it's like, well, this isn't even a question anymore. He has to stay here, right? So I would think that that, for me, is maybe the biggest thing offensively anyway that I would look at. Then defensively, it would be Barnes. You know, are we going to see Barnes? Is he going to be able to hold up? And is he going to be able to give them something that they haven't had? And I maybe stole the two easy ones, so I'll ask you the same question. But is there are there two that you would say maybe offense and defense there?
Well, you kind of led into mine, because I really want to see – I would like to see what Jared Goff playing well for 60 minutes looks like. And this is a defense that's going to give him – like you said, this is a defense that's going to bring some pressure, but they're going to give him some chances to go downfield. So is this going to look like the first half where he kept – you know, he was – sliding the pocket, he was keeping plays alive behind the line of scrimmage, he was keeping his eyes deep, he found Cephas on that one, he looked for some shots. Is he going to be like that, or is it going to be where it just get the ball out of my hands, I can't do this right now, and he's throwing 1 yard checkdowns every time, and he's taking some bad sacks, and he's throwing into triple coverage, you know, turnovers that are flipping the field. This is another test for him, and sort of where he's at with this offense, because Man, I can't shake what that first half looked like. Like, if Jared Goff plays really well for 60 minutes, they have enough with the run game and the offensive line to be pretty dangerous offensively. So
I agree, and I would bring it back even further to week one. I mean, you can take the thing about Campbell said all the way back, not to get us all the way on another topic here, but, like, the offense is – it can hang up front. Give them a chance, right? And they might surprise you. Like, I agree.
All right. Well, we got, like I said, Ravens in here on Sunday afternoon at Ford Field as the Lions try to snap out of this early season winless skid, get Dan Campbell his first win as head coach. And we'll be back again next Tuesday to wrap it up. Make sure you head over to theathletic.com. If you don't have a subscription yet, we're still running our 50% off deal, which you can get through any of the links to our stories that we tweet out. As mentioned at the start, our podcast on the Athletic app is ad-free. You can also find it still on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, everywhere else. So thanks to everyone who's been listening and rating us and reviewing us, and especially those of you who have subscribed and are listening on the app now. We're excited to be there. So, we'll be back again next week. And thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.